You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Matt Gillum, in for Gemma Gaudette. Colorectal cancer is the third most commonly diagnosed cancer and the second leading cause of cancer deaths in men and women combined in the United States. The American Cancer Society estimates that this year alone, more than 95,000 people will be diagnosed with colon cancer, almost 40,000 will be diagnosed with rectal cancer, and 50,000 people will die from the disease. And frighteningly, younger people are getting this as well. Joining us live in studio to speak more about the disease is Dr. Benjamin Karsten. He's a surgeon specializing in colon and rectal surgery. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're glad you're here. So let's start off and just sort of like establish what we are talking about. Can you lay out for us what exactly colon and rectal cancers are?
Sure. Colon and rectal cancer are essentially the same type of cancer. The technical term is called adenocarcinoma. It's the cell type that the cancer starts in. It happens as a result of mutations that build up in our cells over a lifetime. Some people are born with a risk of these mutations, but most people don't have that risk at baseline. And as we age, our cells divide, and we're talking about billions of cells in our colon and our bowel. And over time, those mutations can build up and lead to polyps. And polyps are the precursor to colon cancer. And once you get a polyp, there's a higher risk that it can turn into cancer eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's our opportune time for getting in, screening, and getting those polyps out of there so that it never turns into cancer.
So are there risk factors for getting these types of cancers for certain populations, perhaps at an elevated risk?
Certainly there are some smaller groups that are at higher risk, but in general, I always tell patients that, you know, an individual's lifetime risk of developing colon or rectal cancer is about 5%, so about 1 in 20 people have that chance. And it doesn't matter what race or ethnicity, the risk is always about that high. Certainly if you have a family history, the risk is going to be higher. If you're a smoker, a heavy drinker, things like that, that can increase our risk in general as well.
In cases of family history, about how much does that increase the likelihood of you getting this cancer or other diseases? I mean, is there sort of a set figure that if it is in your family that you're about X percent more likely to get something?
Yeah, I mean, the relative risk is based on who is affected. So if it's somebody that's within a generation of you, so if it's a parent, like a mother or father, or if it's a brother or sister, then your risk can go up multiple folds compared to the baseline risk. If it's a distant relative, like a grandparent, multiple generations away, then your risk is only going to be mildly elevated.
So what are survival rates like for these cancers? I mean, how common is it to beat them?
In like most cancers, it just depends on the stage of the cancer. So if we catch it early, it's more treatable. And so there's four stages for colon and rectal cancer. Just a brief description. Stage one is when the polyp has just turned into cancer. It hasn't really invaded very far. Stage two is when the polyps or the cancer starts to grow into the wall of the colon or even through the wall of the colon or the rectum. Stage three, regardless of the depth of the tumor, is when the lymph nodes are affected, and that's how this tumor usually spreads. It doesn't spread so much through the blood. It's usually more through the lymph nodes. And so anybody that has a positive lymph node is considered stage 3 cancer. And stage 4 cancer is when the cancer has spread outside of the colon or rectum and away from the local lymph nodes into a distant part of the body. And so success rates really depend on the stage. For stage 1, and most of these are treated surgically for cure. For stage 1, recurrence risk should be less than 5%. For stage 2 colon rectal cancers, the risk of recurrence is around 10 to 15%. And these are just ranges, really. But for stage 3, the risk of recurrence becomes much more variable. We can see rates higher than 30 to 50%, depending on, you know, how risky the stage 3 is.
Right.
And then stage 4 is oftentimes incurable, but there are some times when you have an isolated spread of the disease where you can still do surgery, treat it, and still potentially get a cure.
You said this starts with polyps. Now, is it possible to perceive them? Do you feel them? Do you notice changes in your stool, perhaps? Or how do you become aware that outside of just going to the doctor and getting some sort of test, is there a way to tell that perhaps something is off?
And that's the ticket right there, is that when you have polyps and they're small, you don't feel them at all. People don't know they have polyps. You can't tell. I often have patients come in and say, I know my body. I know when I'll have it. And the reality is you really don't. polyps or small growths that you can't feel. They typically don't bleed. But as they get bigger over time, then you might start to see some blood. You might have some subtle changes in your bowel habits. But they're not distinct symptoms per se. They're subtle, and it's, you know, people often attribute it to dietary changes, stress in their life, et cetera, and attribute these changes to that, when in reality it could be something going on.
So I've heard that more and more young people are being diagnosed with colorectal cancers. Is there research about this trend? I mean, that's fairly alarming.
It's true that we are seeing much more frequent patients younger than 50 with colorectal cancer, and 50 is sort of the cutoff because 90% of cases occur to people that are over 50. But nowadays, we're seeing younger people on a regular basis, and historically, we haven't screened younger people for cancer because far fewer being affected.
The trends don't indicate that being a problem.
But nowadays, now we're seeing that a lot more younger people are being affected.
And do we have any idea why?
We don't. Our guess is that it's multifactorial. It's processed food. It's smoking, drinking. It's the stress of our daily life. It's a lot of different factors. But I can't say that we've narrowed it down to one thing for why it's happening in our society.
We're speaking with Dr. Benjamin Karsten. He's a surgeon specializing in colon and rectal surgeries. We always appreciate hearing from you, our listeners. You can find us on Twitter at KBSX915 or get us on Facebook at the page Boise State Public Radio. So we were talking about the signs and the symptoms, we were talking about the polyps, but are there other signs and symptoms that can manifest that you can be aware of, that you can just think something is off, I don't feel right? Is there something like that?
Certainly there's classic symptoms that one would feel usually once the polyp is becoming larger or if it's turned into cancer, and that's going to be certainly bowel habit changes, where you become irregular, may have loose stool, might have blood in the stool. The blood can be dark. Certainly that's a worrisome sign when you're passing stool that looks like coffee grounds.
But this is scary because, I mean, you say it only becomes perceptible once it's grown and you almost certainly have at least stage two or three.
And that's why we want to get the word out to get people in to get their screening done when they're completely asymptomatic. That is the best time to screen somebody with a colonoscopy or one of the other tests that we use.
So I'm just going to say, then what sorts of early detection exist for this types of disease in terms of prevention, are there things we can do?
Well, the main one that people probably heard of or know about or have had done is colonoscopy, and that's where we use a flexible camera to look through the colon and the rectum up to the start of the small bowel. And with that camera, we can see the polyps themselves and basically remove them with a little grasper and get them out of there. And by doing that, can reduce the risk of ever getting cancer by, in the high 90%.
Just by plucking out the polyps, that it narrows, reduces your chance greatly.
Exactly.
Really, just that.
This is one of the most preventable cancers that there is. But we need to get the word out so people know about it and know that at least by age 50, you should start getting your colonoscopy. And if you have a family history, you should start at a younger age based on the age of the person that was affected in your family.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, with more people under age 50 getting diagnosed with these cancers, is there a prescribed age you would say they should start? I mean, I'm well under 50, but I don't feel like a spring chicken anymore. Is it too early for me, or what? When do you go in?
Well, basically, the general rule is that we would start at age 50 for any individual, regardless of your family history. The American Cancer Society has come out with a recommendation now for starting at age 45, and I completely endorse that. The problem is that not all insurance companies have gotten on board with that and may not pay for it at age 45.
How old are some of the youngest patients that you have that come in?
30s and 40s, and I'm seeing 40-year-olds in their 40s more routinely. People that were healthy up until a few months prior till coming in, and then they have bowel habit changes, bleeding, and then which prompts a colonoscopy. In some cases, I've had people who have had bleeding only once or twice. They got worried about it, got a colonoscopy, and fortunately detected it at hopefully the earliest stage possible.
So March is National Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and the motto for the campaign is don't assume. Don't assume you're not at risk. Don't assume you're too young. In our final couple of minutes here, tell us a little bit about the campaign.
In general, it's just a campaign of awareness. We need to get the word out. I don't think we've done a good job of that in the past in general. Letting people know that everybody's at risk, men and women equally. And most importantly, people that don't have a family history. I often get a lot of feedback from patients who say, well, I didn't get my colonoscopy because nobody in my family has cancer, or, you know, I don't know anybody. And so, but that person still has that roughly 5% risk they could still develop it. So we're, with this campaign, we're trying to get the word out to as many people as possible to know, to have it on their radar to get this done, because it is preventable.
It's preventable. It is easily treatable, but it is deadly when it does get to those late stages. So just, you know, hey, it might not be that pretty, but this could save your life very easily.
That's right. And with the colonoscopy in recent years, we do see a subtle decline in the rate of colon cancer, but we still need to get the word out. And the more people we get screened, the further drop we'll see in colon cancer and rectal cancer.
Dr. Benjamin Karsten is a surgeon specializing in colon and rectal surgery. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming in today.
Thanks for having
me here. Really appreciate it. As we just heard, cases of colon cancer are on the rise in younger adults. And did you know that health professionals in the Treasure Valley work with local school districts to educate children about various health risks? One topic they cover is colorectal health, in the Boise School District. Those conversations, they start at around the fourth grade. Here with us live in studio are Vicki Jekic, Director of Community and Outreach for Mountain States Tumor Institute, and teacher Nora Hall with the Boise District. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. So I was really surprised to find out that a conversation about colon health starts in the fourth grade. Why do you start at such a young age?
Excuse me. Yeah, we actually start cancer prevention education at the early ages, just in general. Again, because a lot of those behaviors that we want to instill in the adults start when they are young. So as the earliest we can get them to learn about healthy behaviors, healthy eating, you know, the right types of beverages to drink, even the physical activity, start at a young age. So for the entire life, from starting at the young age, they'll have those practices established.
So, I mean, I don't have kids, but I know they are particularly susceptible to giggles. So how do you talk to a kid as young as 9 about something like colon health, but also raise the topic of cancer, which I would imagine, you know, could be very scary and a fraught conversation?
Sure, and I can speak to what we see in the classroom in the elementary, and then Nora can speak to specifically her class. But even in the fourth grade, it's amazing how knowledgeable these students are relative to just general health. But there are little giggles, but they're also intrigued to learn more. And they're sponges, of course, mm-hmm. and they want to know why. Why should we be drinking more water rather than these sugar-sweetened beverages? Why can't I be on my computer game for hours on end rather than going outside? So that once they start understanding the practicality of how their behaviors can improve their health or get them on the right path for good, healthy behaviors long-term and reduce risks for things like cancer, it starts to connect with them. And then they make those connections in what they're eating, and again, those physical activities, and even just going out and walking their dog and getting that activity going at a young age.
Well, Nora, you're on the front lines. Give me a breakdown. What do you see in the classroom when you raise these topics?
Absolutely. I mean, the kids can be a little overwhelmed by it, especially with cancer. But when you talk about habits and when you talk to the kids about knowing their normal, because if they can know their normal starting at fourth and eighth grade, then that change is something that they can be aware of. So it's moving your body and it's eating your fruits and vegetables, but it's also about paying attention to your stool and paying attention to whether you're dehydrated and the things that are coming out of your body and paying attention to those things. And there's not embarrassment, it's knowledge. And that is the most important thing.
Do you have to do something to sort of to demystify it before you go into the discussion? Just like, we're going to talk about this topic, and you say some of the giggly words maybe, but then once it's out of the system, they are paying attention?
Vicki and the group, first off, just a shout out to Boise State, to St. Luke's, and to the Boise School District for maintaining this partnership to bring this prevention education is phenomenal. And there is. I mean, we talk about what does the colon do? What does the liver do? What do the kidneys do? So they have an understanding of their body and their systems, so they understand, wow, so there would be blood in your stool because of that polyp, like the doctor previously talked about, and the kids start to understand why that would be. So maybe that headache isn't for Tylenol. Maybe that headache is for water because you need more water in your body to pay attention to those things. So I think self-awareness and then that good relationship with a doctor is vital. And Boise State and St. Luke's and the Boise School District are setting that up.
And the important thing is to make sure that the students, as well as the teachers, ask the questions. We don't want them to not ask the questions if they're experiencing symptoms or if they have, say, an unusual mole, because we talk about sun safety and skin cancer prevention in the schools as well, and even tobacco prevention, tobacco use prevention and things because of the correlation of tobacco use to the health of their lungs and other parts of their body. So again, making those connections pretty easily for those students, it starts to click. Again, being honest and transparent of why they should be eating the healthier foods and why they should avoid that sedentary lifestyle.
Well, the lessons that you teach in the Boise School District called Healthy Habits, Healthy You, can you walk us through the program a little bit? How does it work and what sorts of things are covered? And I mean, I think this is a great time to mention that to our listeners, you're not here in studio with us, but our guests have brought show and tell items. There are samples of kidneys and colons that are attached to clipboards in here with us.
Right. I'll take that one for sure. We started the Healthy Habits, Healthy You program, actually the conversation in developing it about 6.5 years ago. And Dr. Dan Zuckerman, who is our executive medical director, along with Dr. Kelly Spear over at Boise State University and I, we got our heads together on what can we do not only to reduce the obesity epidemic, but raising awareness about the connection of some of these unhealthy behaviors to cancer and how can we reduce that cancer risk. And knowing we were already in the schools talking about skin cancer prevention and talking about tobacco use prevention, again, back to being healthier with avoiding some of those unhealthy behaviors. So we brought this concept forward with using not just a classroom presentation, but also specimen samples to bring in something that visually they can understand the correlation of unhealthy behaviors and the risk factors for cancer. So our pathology department has been instrumental as well in preserving these organ tissue samples of the lung, liver, kidney, and colon to, again, reinforce the digestive health practices and the importance of physical activity, avoiding sugar-sweetened beverages, and eating healthy. And in partnership with the Boise School District and Boise State, it's just been a great collaboration in getting some training for students to do the teaching. So there's partnership there with Boise State to teach in the classroom, but also with the teacher in the classroom already there to reinforce the health, the science, and the mechanics of what we're trying to impose on those children and learning how the body functions and then looking at these specimen samples and again, bringing that correlation of cancer prevention forward.
We're speaking with Vicki Jekic, Director of Community and Outreach for Mountain States Tumor Institute, and teacher Nora Hall. Nora, what do the kids do when they see these?
Oh, they just, well, I definitely prep them ahead of time that this is coming, but I also let them know that there's full-blown anatomy students that don't get this opportunity. So they're excited. They think it's really neat. But it is definitely, when you come up, and I'm touching one of the samples right now, and you have the kids actually touch and feel what it should feel like and what then an unhealthy specimen feels like.
I feel like we need to do this right now.
Absolutely. You should do this. Okay, so here's my test to you. Can you tell just by feeling them what's your prediction on what is a healthy sample and what is an unhealthy sample?
Okay, this one is slightly softer, maybe?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, touch that one.
That's
then.
There. And now I'm going to a large one. It's a larger colon. And
so that would be a cross-section that it's okay. Opened up from...
Well, this one's a little more oily, so I'm wondering about the integrity of the bag.
Many eighth graders have...
Okay, there we go. more malleable. So I'm guessing maybe this is the healthy one?
That is the healthy one.
Okay.
And you can also feel the tougher edges on the unhealthy one that would cause some of those symptoms, right, that we heard about, of a change in bowel habits, and that things are going to be different than that normal, and that's so important to pay attention to.
All right, well, we got colons, and now we've got kidneys.
Well, and the important part of this is it's tactile. Again, they can touch and feel and visualize. And in this case with the kidney, we have different sized tumors, as well as being able to feel a colon cancer that's contained in this particular specimen. But again, the idea is reach the students where they are, understand that not all of them can learn through just the presentations that we give, Boise State students and myself, to the students in 4th, 8th, and 11th grade. But really, what else can we do to make sure they can understand and grasp the concept of healthy behaviors? And we encourage them to ask questions. And the unfortunate thing is when we ask students to raise their hands if they've ever known someone or been affected by cancer, over 50% of the students in the classrooms have raised their hands. So we know they're aware, just even through personal perspective, and even teachers and staff have been affected at the schools. So we know we want to make sure they understand how this cancer prevention can be so important for them to know, even at a young age.
We have just a couple of minutes left, but I know that each of you have been affected by cancer. Can you share a little bit about that and how maybe that has translated into the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. My healthy, vibrant, just incredible sister at 41 was diagnosed with colon cancer. And it is not the best outcome, but she has had opportunity for many more treatments simply because of that self-awareness and that early intervention and paying attention to her body. So I share that with the kids. And I also share that just because you look healthy doesn't mean you are healthy. It's more to it than just that. So paying attention to your normal is a big deal.
And I had a dear friend pass away this year from colon cancer, and she was only 50. And we do know, I have other family members and friends who've been affected by cancer. Just like I said, the students have raised their hands and saying they've been touched by cancer. So again, the more we can bring awareness of signs, symptoms, prevention, what we can do to know what's normal for us in our bodies, that would be so important for us.
Well, I'd like to thank each of you for coming in today. Vicki Jekic is the Director of Community and Outreach for Mountain States Tumor Institute, and Nora Hall is a teacher in the Boise District.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.